Okay, podcast back again, and hope you are doing well. If you missed Friday's edition with Jay Billis, be sure to go back on the site, on the blog, it's there. Or if you're not already subscribed in iTunes, just search CBS Sports College Basketball Podcast or some variation of that. It'll be the first one that pops up. I think we're at a 4-star rating, so go subscribe and give it a 5-star, even though Goodman or Parrish's appearances may dissuade you from that. Today's episode, we've got like a little bit of a Geek Week thing going on here. In fact, I think Goodman's going to tongue-in-cheek promote it this way, even though he'll be on the Wednesday podcast. But today I'm bringing on Dan Hanner. He's been on the podcast before. Friday we'll have Ken Pomeroy and probably John Gassaway, who is the editor of College Basketball Prospectus, the preseason magazine that should be coming out in the upcoming days or week or so at the latest. We've got the season coming around the corner. Wanted to do this podcast with Gassaway and Dan. Gassaway's having some serious problems with his Skype. He lives in the middle of Jersey, and I think Sandy's already coming in strong. We're recording this on Sunday night, and my intro has been way too long. I have not let Dan talk yet. So, Dan, welcome back on the show, man. I'll get to what we're hitting on in just a second, but how are you doing? I presume you're safe and dry because you're out in the middle of the country, right?
No, I'm in Virginia, actually, but It's only raining lightly where I am right now, so, all good.
Are you fairly inland, though, or are you kind of close to the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., so...
Oh, okay. Well, hey, I just read the metro's down, so if you're planning on using that tomorrow, you're out of luck there, buddy.
You tell me this now.
Okay. Well, seriously, though, stay dry, and hopefully you don't lose power here. That's also partly why I'm really happy we're recording this podcast tonight because I'm up here in Stamford, Connecticut. And apparently, which will become, that 60-mile epicenter of the biggest damage any northeast storm has done to the greater New York City and southwest Connecticut area. So let's hope that that we don't get too catastrophic here. All right, so the podcast today, we're going to talk about Dan's rankings. There are two rankings that are getting released this week that are pretty big, and that's Dan's and then Ken Pomeroy's, which I think get released Thursday, and we're going to have him on the day after to defend himself on Friday. So before we get into the teams that are actually on your rankings, for the people that follow these things from afar, they might not even check in until January, but they listen to the podcast, they hear about these things. What is the difference between what they'll see with you and what they'll see with Ken Pom? And what's the difference even between what they'll see when that, ever-present but hated so much RPI starts popping up, 2-3 months into the season?
Well, the big thing that I thought was really important to do, and what you'll see this year is actually lineup-based projections. So forget it. The days of returning minutes, returning possessions, just trying to use some vague compilation of numbers from a previous season are over. This is the first year I've gone now, and I've predicted the tempo free stats for every single Division I player from Grambling State all the way up to Indiana. Everybody in their lineup projected the stats, added those stats up in order to get a team projection. And to me, I mean, it's just been an incredibly fun process to see those lineups evolve over time. But, that's really the thing that's going to be new. And of course, I'm as curious as you are to hear what Ken's going to share on Thursday. So,
yes, Ken had mentioned to me a couple weeks back that he actually – and it's mildly – arrogant's not the right word, but his reason for it is valid. He actually does not – like, he could have his rankings released in the middle of August if he wanted, granted, roster adjustments aside. But he intentionally does not release his rankings until everyone else's are released because – he doesn't want to influence anyone else. And it's reached a point with Pomeroy where actually it would. Like, if for some reason, just throw a hypothetical, let's just say North Carolina was fourth in his rankings this year, then you'd probably see if it was ever physically possible to look at one universe in which they had, everyone had his rankings prior and one they didn't, you'd probably actually see a little bit of an effect there. And so that's why he is staggered off his rankings. I'm interested to see the similarities and differences in both years. By the way, you can follow Dan on Twitter. He's a writer for realgm.com. And Dan, why don't you toss out your Twitter handle so everyone knows where they can hop on and follow you?
It's really straightforward. Just at Dan Hanner.
Okay, and that is HANNER, just so everyone knows. So be sure to do that. Now, Dan's rankings appeared in ESPN the magazine last year, and they will again for the second time this year, in addition to being a part of the great preseason book that is Basketball Prospectus, which is a different kind of approach Tone and Tome with an M as the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook, which we did a podcast on 2 weeks ago with Chris Dorch, who's edited that for over a decade now. Two different kinds of research go into that, even though obviously the content in general, you know, the same teams players we're dealing with, but both highly recommended to anyone that considers themselves a true college basketball fan. So that being said, I wanted to get him on the pod. It's perfect. I'm going to make sure this pod doesn't go live until the rankings are actually live. I didn't want to spoil that, but I have them ahead of time. I feel so in the end, man. I appreciate that. So there's a lot to get to here, but I'm going to let you actually unveil. Can you count down for me, if you have them in front of you here, can you count down just the top 20? So 20-1 in your rankings preseason, what are they?
All right. So number 20, we start out with a little bit of a surprise with the Pitt Panthers, who I think have really, you know, been a little under the radar. I mean, I think people, you know, don't realize how much talent and how much potential this team still has. This is probably the most top, you know, 100 talents that Jamie Dixon has had. A lot of that's because a lot of those players have been a little bit disappointing so far, but the potential of these guys is still very high. And I think people have, you know, completely underrated this team so far, partly because of Trayvon Woodall's injury, basically, you know, torpedoing the season last year. Memphis comes in at 19, no real surprise there. 18 is Tennessee, who, you know, John Gassaway may talk a little on Friday. I know he loves the Volunteers just based on what they were able to do last year after
Stokes.
Yes, yeah. After Stokes became eligible.
By the way, shed like 20 pounds of fat and is cut up this year. I also love Tennessee. Continue.
Missouri, I know you've been a
big... I'm high. Yeah, I am.
Alex Oriaki, I think, is going to have a complete bounce-back season from last season, which was certainly disappointing for him. They bring in so much transfer talent. I mean, it's really, you know... When Jabari Brown becomes eligible, yeah. Is he going to even be able to knock Ernest Ross and Keon Bell out of the lineup at that point? I mean, it's going to be really interesting because Missouri has a heck of a lot of talent. Although the other thing I was going to say about Missouri that's worth bringing up is I love the indefinite suspension of Michael Dixon this week. Yeah. To me, indefinite suspension at this point is one of those terms that is so, you know, I when I hear indefinite suspension, I think like two games, maybe, you know, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, they'll miss Alcorn State and Nichols State, but pretty sure by the time we get down to Battle for Atlantis that Michael Dixon will be back in the lineup. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
it's an on point criticism and actually worthy of kind of going into further at a different time, not to like totally cut you off from your thing here. You're totally right, though. I mean, it's become this de facto thing for teams and coaches. Something bad happens, let's assess the damage, but in the immediacy, let's get out a 100-word press release and just indefinitely suspend them.
Right. Yeah. Indefinitely sounds so bad at the time of the incident, but, you know, lo and behold, we got a big game coming up. Oh, they're back.
Yeah.
But, to keep going. 16 is New Mexico, and New Mexico is a team that I actually am not too happy with the way the model came out on. I think the defensive prediction is a little bit too strong. One thing I added to the model this year, which I think works really well for a lot of teams, is coach-related defensive effects. But I think they like New Mexico a little bit too much because of some of the stuff Steve Alford did at Iowa earlier in his career. UNLV, who... You know, if you don't love UNLV this season, I don't know what you're paying attention to, because they are loaded across the board with just super athletic players. You know, Rice obviously started a much faster paced system this last season, and you know, he finally has the horses to make it work this year. I think that is going to be one of the most fun teams to watch. Gonzaga comes in at 14. 13 is NC State, who we have talked, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about whether NC State deserves to be the ACC favorite. But, you know, this is a 9-7 team last year. I'm predicting a huge jump forward for them, just not necessarily quite to the top of the ACC. Syracuse comes in at 12. Louisville comes in at 11.
We'll go back to them. Just Louisville's at 11. We'll hit on that once you're done here, because obviously Louisville, top three preseason teams. So go ahead and count down the top 10 here.
Yeah, Wisconsin is number 10. Arizona is and I'm glad I'm looking at the ones I sent you, which are no longer correct. So I really should have started.
You made the adjustment with Gasser.
Yeah, so I made an adjustment with Gasser today. It's a huge story, and this is one of the things I can go on. Yeah, I do need a little time to go on this. This is one of the things that having lineup based projections is so critical for, as compared to just returning minutes. if you just looked at returning production from last year, Gasser is not that vital to Wisconsin's lineup. It's not like he was a huge, huge scorer, huge assist leader or anything like that last year. But when you start to do this on a lineup, you know, player by player level about who's actually going to be in the starting lineup, who's going to play a point guard role for that team, his injury is huge because the alternatives now are a freshman, George Marshall. It's a combo guard who didn't really play that well last year in Trey Jackson. You know, it's maybe another freshman playing out of position, Zach Showalter. And so, you know, these alternatives for Wisconsin are not very good at all. And the result is when you put one of them in the starting lineup instead of Gasser, that Wisconsin actually falls to 33rd now in my rankings.
Wow. Okay. Makes sense. And in case, like, you know, Goodman or like-minded people like that who actually wanted to endure this podcast and have all these stats thrown at him, it's important to mention the fact, and you get into this with your introduction that'll be on, I think, Prospectus tomorrow on the actual webpage, and just how much pragmatic and real thought goes into this. You acknowledge the fact that, listen, any sort of person that sees these players in the offseason, you make a point of Myers Leonard, you know, people that would have seen him last summer clearly could have predicted that he would have a big season coming ahead, while the numbers wouldn't say that. You're very aware of just how valuable watching players in the offseason and knowing their roles within teams can be very important and be almost as accurate in projecting certain teams or certain players. But on the major scale, the data tends to be much more objective, and projecting out over the course of a season, it tends to be more reliable. Is that fair to say?
I think it's another data point you should sort of have in the back of your head. And if you see something sort of contradictory, I mean, I think it's the contradictory results that are fun, because those are the ones that make you sort of scratch your head and reevaluate and say, was there something that I'm sort of missing here with this team? But it would never be the only information, as you've said. I mean, and as I've said, we learn a lot from watching basketball teams, and the numbers don't tell us everything.
Right. So. Totally. And I feel like we can't harp on that enough, but no matter like how often we say it, some just don't want to hear it. Like, they just think that it's always only about the numbers, only about the numbers. And the thing is, I think it was Henry Abbott, the true hoop guru for ESPN.com, does All Pro Ball. He once had a line that I loved. He said, "I don't love numbers, I just use them." And that's basically it. Like, they're there. We're going to use them to add context to the conversation and make it smarter instead of just kind of just going off what we see, because why not try to be more accurate with it, you know? All right, so you have you had Wisconsin at 10, but they're down to 33.
Right. So we'll continue then, just you know.
But the top,
I guess,
nine,
I'm giving you the top 19 now. So it's number 9 is Arizona, sneaks in, obviously talented, bringing in, you know, one of the best recruiting classes in the country. Number 8 is Ohio State, still has a ton of talent, even if they lose Jared Sullinger. And Duke comes in at number 7, which I think if you look at Duke, you know, and I've said this before, you have to say that last year was a fluke defensively for this team. You know, I think they had some serious issues on the perimeter defending opposing guards, because they were playing a bunch of two guards. They didn't really have anybody locked down. I think Quinn Cook and Rashid Suleiman are going to do a much better job this year. And a huge defensive improvement expected for them, which is why they sort of go back into their traditional slot as ACC favorites. Florida obviously brings back a number of talented players. They slide in at number 6. Michigan State still strong at number 5. Number 4, Kansas. I think it's going to be a very interesting team. Not necessarily, you know, some veteran players on Kansas, some talented newcomers. Going to be interesting to see how they fit in. The reason Kansas gets in so high at number 4 is just because Bill Self has flat out become the best defensive coach in the country. UCLA comes in at number 3. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a surprise, but this is one of the things when you read the intro on Basketball Prospectus on Monday, when we release the rankings officially, I'm going to have quite a bit to say on them, which is basically UCLA is a fantastic on-paper team. If you look on paper at what they have for their lineup, you can't argue that it seems like, you know, they have a ton of talented pieces. But it isn't necessarily about having talented pieces. It's about how they're going to fit together and, you know, some of the extenuating circumstances. I think people have very realistic doubts about UCLA. But if you just look on paper at what they bring in, they should probably be slotted about 3rd in the country. Kentucky's number 2. As you pointed out, they're a top 3 team in just about everybody's rankings, and Indiana's number 1, which I don't think is a big controversy.
Okay, so I've got all sorts of thoughts here. I said we go to Louisville first. Let's just do that here. I want to be true to my word here. I'm with you on Louisville, and I think a lot of the Tempo Free sect will be with us because here's my thing, and I haven't really gone into this too much on the blog because I just didn't want to, like, I don't know, get on a high horse or anything. But all right, so I saw Louisville in person many times last year. Frustrating SL team to watch. Like, yeah, sure, awesome defensively, like so good defensively, and I love Gordy Jang's game. I don't trust Siva. I don't think I ever will trust Siva. Nice player. I don't know, just something about his game. It's nothing against the kid. I mean, listen, he's more than capable of being a good Big East major conference guard. Don't get me wrong there. I just can't see him being reliable for the whole season. So the big thing was Louisville had serious issues scoring last year, okay? And so I just don't know if it's going to translate definitively in a year. You know, a summer's gone by. They bring back a lot of guys, but you make a great point in your introduction where they lose two of their most reliable offensive players. So those guys are gone. So we're just going to expect, you know, Russ Smith to be rusticulous all the time. And the positive factor, is Steve going to score more? Are we thinking Wayne Blackshear should have a breakout year? What about Shane Bohannon? Is he more than just a sturdy piece? Can you kind of extrapolate a little bit on Louisville? And were you surprised they were that low? Do you think they should be higher? Do you think they should be lower? Because the Cardinals are a team a lot of people are high on, but I think the numbers are going to sour a little. And when KenPom's rankings come out, I'd be shocked if they were a top five team.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, you stole a lot of what I was saying there.
I'm sorry,
a big believer in Bohannon coming through for them. But I think a lot of it, too, you know, is a belief in some of these guys who do have a ton of potential. I mean, who were, you know, highly recruited out of – I mean, you know, so we're not certainly saying that Louisville doesn't have a lot of talent on this team. I'm trying to think of who's one of the guys that I mentioned in that intro. Just give me a
– Keurig and Chris Smith.
Oh, yeah. Well, so Keurig and Smith are gone. But the one I was thinking of was Kevin Ware, who last year, Kevin Ware was injured. He sort of came into the lineup late, and he looked horrible. I mean, his numbers were absolutely off the page, terrible in the limited time he played. But Kevin Ware is still a high-potential guy. He looked great in high school. There's no reason to think that he won't necessarily eventually be able to become an explosive player for them. But it's really with Louisville, it's just a question of, you know, how long it's going to take. And I think what a lot of the experts are expressing and why they're picking Louisville top three is that, you know, they really do believe in Rick Pitino's ability to bring people along.
Totally.
I just don't know that, you know, they should be considered as rock solid. It's even a team like Kansas that has a lot more sort of efficient, experienced guys in the lineup to go along with that.
Yeah, and listen, I'm just down on Louisville as a Final Four team. Like, I
right.
totally – and even, like, when we start talking about teams like that, like, of course, once the tournament comes, they're going to be capable of winning four games. But we try and slot these teams into certain different tiers and levels. Like, to me, Louisville's just a top 12 team. That's plenty good. That's going to be good for a three seed. And, like, Luke Hancock, the transfer from George Mason, he could be really good for them. I really like his game. So I think they'll be good. And they actually – here, the weird thing is I think they could be better than last year. But last year was just all defense and really good matchups in the tournament, and they got hot in the Big East. But when I watched them in person, like, this is one of the teams that I can say, like, it was them and UConn that I saw more than anyone. And I mean, and there were just times where I just could not stand watching these two teams anymore because you see one group so much, and especially when they can't score, it's a little frustrating.
And I love Peyton Siva in crunch time. I mean, I think there's a lot of positive things there, but like you say, I mean, over the course of the season, he made a lot of mistakes. The team, you know, had a lot of bad possessions and you think that should predict something. So
you got UCLA at 3 and Kansas at 4 that you mentioned. Now, the interesting thing, I like to look at Kansas and just take a step back. You know, I remember a year ago, Kansas only had Thomas Robinson. Didn't, you know, not only, but he was like the big star. It was like Thomas Robinson and a bunch of guys that didn't know what they would do. Kansas was figured maybe an 8 or 9 or 10 seed. What do? They have another awesome year. Bill Self is ridiculous. They obviously go to the title game. And now we're back to a year. You know, they don't have the super stud, okay? But they've got so many good pieces. And so here we are again, Kansas. In the top five, and so many people forget just Tempo Free, just general people's consensus of what Kansas can be here. A lot of people think they're that good. I really like them there. I'm actually feeling good because my final four teams, as stupid as that is to try and predict what four teams will be in different regions, I have Kansas, Gonzaga, Vegas, and Missouri, all top 17 teams here in your model. So I'm feeling probably a little too confident on that. I'm sure it's bound to backfire on both of us. UCLA, you mentioned they've got all this talent. The question I have, and for people listening, how do you factor in Shabazz Muhammad? And this is obviously assuming Muhammad's going to be eligible, Kyle Anderson's going to be eligible. So when you take in incoming recruits and you look at Drew and the Ware twins who come from Carolina, flameouts big time. So people might have an instant reaction like UCLA 3, even if they have anyone, that seems way too high. How do you quantify getting this team that high? What data leads to them only being slotted behind Indiana and UK?
Yeah, I mean, so first off, obviously I'm assuming Muhammad and Kyle Anderson are going to be healthy, or I mean, going to be eligible, which...
And Muhammad healthy in this case. I mean, it's just a minor shoulder injury, but...
Yeah,
yeah.
He should be back at some point, but... Yeah. Right, so that factors into the decision. But, I mean, I think the big mystery here, and you know, the thing that the model, you know, I think is a little shaky on still is sort of the impact of transfers. And what I've really, you know, found, a little bit to my surprise, is just how strong transfers have done, transfers that have gone from one BCS program to another. And I think the weird trends are actually a perfect example of that. At North Carolina, they seemed like they were busts. They were actually both very dominant in the Pac-12 last season. And the model certainly predicts, you know, something similar for Larry Drew, where he's going to be able to, you know, step into a new situation with another fabulous coach in Ben Howland and be able to be successful right away. But I think that's the thing that I think most experts would disagree with. They would say, I'm just skeptical of Larry Drew. I just, you know, we saw how much, not only how terrible his stats were at North Carolina, but how he seemed to be a negative, you know, impact on all his teammates, But you know, you have to ask questions. How much of that was really that Larry Drew, the top 50 recruit who UCLA still wanted, was really such a bad player, or he was just a bad fit for North Carolina's system? Roy Williams is a system coach. He believes in what he does. He's not going to change, you know, his system if it doesn't fit his players. Larry Drew is not comfortable running up and down the floor, finding guys in transition, really orchestrating the team the way he wanted. More of a half-court system like Ben Howland's likely to run, he may fit in a lot better. So, you know, I think Larry Drew is really the key thing that the model, I think, is a little bit more optimistic perhaps than what most experts are. But, I mean, you know, look, I mean, Muhammad and Anderson are top, you know, the number one and number three recruit. Teams that have those type of players are usually very, very good teams. It's not, you know, that shouldn't be any surprise. I mean, I think they've been dinged by people at least partly because of the eligibility concern, and people are sort of hedging their bets on how good they're going to be. But assuming they're eligible, you know, they should be impact players. There's no doubt about it.
To me, with your rankings, headline A and B are UCLA at 3 and Louisville at 11. Will definitely be interesting to see where those teams end up at the end of the year. And if UCLA, for some reason, you know, if Muhammad doesn't end up getting eligible or whatever, if the injury carries over and the NCAA just takes his time, then we kind of throw out your UCLA prediction because it obviously banks on that. But I will be intrigued. I love Pittsburgh at 20, by the way. I really like that team. I don't know if I like them as 20th best in the country, but maybe I do. But the thing is, like, I don't know what Steven Adams is. Like, I've never seen him play. I hear great things. And the same with Gonzaga. They got the big Polish kid. Just expecting huge things from those big guys. And if they come through, then absolutely. But with you, Dan, I want your biggest surprise, wherever in the rankings. It can be whatever team, whatever level you want to pick here. But the team that was higher than you would have guessed and the team that was much lower than you would have guessed.
Wow, that's interesting because, I mean, I think you've evaluated some of these. I mean, I've talked a lot about Michigan. I did a podcast, actually, with some of the Michigan folks. You can look for it on one of their sites. I'll probably tweet it out this week. They Michigan is one of those teams that baffles me. I think it's one of those things where they're extremely low in my rankings. I've got them 44th.
Astonishingly low, absolutely.
Right. I mean, and I think it's one of those things where, you know, you can't really expect the numbers to project this team because this is going to be different from any team John Beilein has ever had before. I mean, we're used to seeing John Beilein teams that have, you know, Zach Novak and Stu Douglas out there who were fantastic players, you know, but they did not have the athleticism to defend at an elite level. And so, you know, what you had historically is John Beilein is just not an elite defensive coach. He's never had a top 25 defensive team. And it's just really hard for me to use historic data to say anything about, you know, Michigan just becoming an elite defensive team. But I think everybody who follows, you know, that team and has started to watch them in practice and seen Glenn Robinson blocking shots in practice. And, you know, they just say, look, this is going to be the best defensive team Beilein has ever had. It's just one of those things where I haven't been able to tease it out with numbers. But I, you know, so that was a surprise, probably not in a good way. You know, other surprises in good or bad ways. I mean, Baylor continues to be a surprise, sort of in a negative fashion. And that's really based on what, you know, there's some coaching inputs that go into my model. And Scott Drew, you know, has been fantastic elite recruiter, one of the best recruiters in the country, but he hasn't been somebody who's been able to take that talent and sort of turn it into a Final Four caliber team. You know, last year was pretty much a high for him, and they did fantastic, but it hasn't been his consistent track record. And so that was a little surprise to me, but one I sort of have a little understanding and belief in that Baylor might not be quite as good. And Texas, I think, is maybe a surprise in the positive way, just a team that I think, again, you know, I think we forget that, you know, they've done it before with super, super young teams. I mean, Texas is literally probably going to be starting all freshmen and sophomores next year. And yet those sophomores all played major, major minutes last season. And one of those freshmen who's coming in is probably one of the guys who I think has gotten less hype than just about anybody in the country, which is Cameron Ridley. Who, you know, shot up the rankings at the end, certainly looks like a top 10 legitimate forward who's going to be able to play in the Big 12. And so, you know, I think that Texas was a team that surprised me how strong their ranking was. But when I looked at it a little closer, I can't say that I necessarily disagree with it.
All right, yeah. I heard very good things about Ridley. I always just like watching Texas for whatever reason in any given year, whether it's the talent or they've got a certain strong point guard. I just like to see what Barnes can do with that team. Sometimes it's frustrating because when you look at all the players Barnes has had and all the teams, only one Final Four, and Longhorn fans, they're frustrated with it. But then at the same time, Rick Barnes has like the best job in college basketball because he makes all that money in a state with no state tax, and there's basically no expectation because it's all in football. He's got he's got a heck of a gig. Team that stood out to me with a passionate but small fan base. It's almost like the pavement of college basketball, pavement alt-rock group from the 90s, and I've lost, you know, 90% of this podcast audience at this point. But San Diego State, you've got at 41, very low. I love SDSU this year. Did that surprise you? And what factored into that considering – you know, last year was the year when they lost a lot of guys and still played well. This year they bring plenty back, and in my opinion, we'll be right there with Vegas in the Mountain West.
No, I mean, a lot of people are saying that. I wrote a little column on RealGM.com on that at the end of last week. That's not one that I feel particularly strong about. I mean, if you look at it last year, San Diego State's numbers were not great. They may have been a sixth seed in the NCAA tournament, but both Pomeroy's rankings had them, you know, 69th. Sagarin's predictor, which is all margin of victory based, had them 71st. And the truth is, you know, I mean, I think somebody said that, you know, they went 10-3 in games decided by one possession or something like that. They were probably a little bit lucky to be as good as they were last year. I have no doubt. In fact, what my model says is San Diego State is going to be a lot better offensively, a lot better defensively than they were last season. They bring in a bunch of, you know, new guys who are going to be huge contributors. They bring back most of their talented players. So I have no doubt, you know, if you ask me, do I think they're going to go further in March? I actually think they're going to go further in March. But what worries me is in the regular season, I think they're going to lose some more games just because they were a little lucky last year. So their record might not be as good, but I think in the end they'll be a better team. So it's, you know, and for people who think that they're going to win the Mountain West, I mean, I honestly can't disagree with that. I mean, part of this too, I think once you start to split hairs between, you know, certain rankings outside, you know, maybe the top 15 or something like this, these teams start to look very similar at a certain level. You know, the difference between San Diego State, who I've got at, 41st, and, you know, I don't know, Minnesota, who I've got 24th, maybe a little higher than people think. It's not much. I mean, that's very much splitting hairs when you look at what the odds would be on a neutral floor for those teams. So, you know, I can't disagree if you like San Diego State more.
And that's a refrain I've heard more with frequency this year than in years past. That listen, you know, the teams that are basically 20 to 45, deciphering them, especially in the early season, it's not going to be easy. And you can generally make that argument anyway. When we start getting to, you know, figuring out who's on the bubble, who's not, whatever. But at the same time, I always feel like, okay, so if you figure like whoever the 25th team is, right? Well, that's going to be somewhere in the 7 or 8 range. And then you're looking at a team that's, you know, 40 or 41st. Like normally there's a discernible difference between a 7 and a 12 in most years. But this might be a year where it might not be, or a 7 and 11. Like, it just, you might not have too much difference in those teams, and we'll see. And I like when that happens. I like when we've got a lot of teams with some interchangeable parts and some indecipherable differences, or so to speak. We'll see if that actually comes to be.
And the other thing I want to say, too, as long as we're talking about the bubble stuff, is, I mean, that's what's really fun, and I hope people enjoy from looking at my ranking series, is just being able to see a lot of these sort of, I guess, a little bit more under the radar teams and where they might be ranked. I mean, I know we spend a lot of time talking about the top 25, but, you know, I'm thrilled to see, you know, where Ohio is ranked. I mean, we saw how great Ohio was, Clark Kellogg's son doing all that against North Carolina last year in the tournament. I'm thrilled to see that they're projected to be, you know, a definite bubble contender this season. You know, I'm thrilled to see a Northern Iowa team that a couple years ago, or, you know, 3 years ago or whatever it was, where, you know, Farouk Manesh had that wonderful moment against Kansas, to see them look like maybe they'll be able to challenge Creighton, to see a Davidson, which brings back everybody and looks like they will be as strong as, you know, they can be without a Stephen Curry on the floor. You know, maybe they can't quite make it to the upper echelon, but this is as strong a team as Davidson can put together. And even teams, you know, like VCU and Murray State and Belmont, who have sort of been the sweethearts the last few years, so they're not real surprises. But, you know, those teams don't necessarily get all the press as the top 25, but it's really fun to look at a rankings like this and see those teams will be in contention for bubble slots and will be really fun to watch again this year, too.
And just to clarify for those listening, he's got Ohio at 42, he's got Northern Iowa at 46, Murray State at 49, Davidson at 51. I think Ohio's a little too high. I'm probably swayed too much. I talked to a lot of MAC coaches in writing their preview, and I believe them that they were rational in their in criticism. It was just like coach speak. So they're telling me off record, like, things they liked, things they didn't. And they basically saw Ohio as, you know, the third or fourth best MAC team that got hot in the right moments. So I want to see if they are that good this year. I'm a little skeptical because of that. I love Davidson. Would probably consider Davidson to be in a mid-30s team. You've got him at 51, but we'll see what shakes out there. The other team that you've got low that I'm going to address, and I'm going to point all the Bearcat fans once again at Dan Hanner on Twitter. He loves criticism, people. So be sure.
I do, because honestly,
you got Cincy at 52, which might be the greatest disparity of any AP to Hanner ranking we have here.
Right. So first off, I part of this ranking makes me very pained, because I do tend to, if I'm going to get to anything, I get to more Georgetown games than anything else. And so I've certainly seen firsthand how Cincinnati has, you know, crushed Georgetown in recent seasons. And so I, you know, if you ask me based on what I've seen on the court, I certainly have, you know, feelings of doubt about how low Cincinnati is ranked here. But I think, you know, a couple things to be careful of here. And I guess I would fight against my own stats a little bit here, which was also, you know, the splits without Yancey Gates last year for Cincinnati were very good. Cincinnati was a much better team in that interim period where he was suspended. And
yes, absolutely.
And so, you know, but having said that, this really comes down to some serious question marks in the middle for Cincinnati, and what the model, you know, isn't quite as confident in. You know, who's going to replace Yancey Gates' numbers? I mean, I think Justin Jackson, his numbers were, I mean, he was an okay player last year, but he wasn't a great player. David Nyarsuk, you know, I think a lot of people have high expectations for him, but, you know, sort of where he came from is not necessarily the place that you expect to find a dominant player from like some of the other, you know, the elite Big East teams might be pulling in a top-ranked high school player to do something like that. And so, you know, that. There are some questions in the front court for Cincinnati, and that's sort of what the model identifies here. But, I mean, you know, Mick Cronin basically improved that team about 5 years in a row in terms of how much they achieved. And so I'm finally, you know, picking them to take a step back here. But you know, there's a reason experts are picking Cincinnati higher than what these numbers say.
All right, we'll close up with this here. Talk league real quick. Couple unpredictable leagues, definite horse chases. Which conference are you most looking forward to following this year because you think it'll be the most volatile, the most unpredictable league? And you can interpret that as for first place, or if there's a first place that's kind of a guarantee, maybe that 2-5, 2-6 range could be a total, bingo ball of unpredictability.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this is something I've said a little bit too, is I am so looking forward to the Big 12 this year. I mean, other than Texas Tech, which obviously is still light years away, and TCU, which is taking a very, very unfortunate step up in talent, the other eight teams in that league all have a lot of reasons for optimism this year. And I you know, there was that really hilarious quote from Bob Huggins recently about, you know, how we're the sixth best team in this league. This must be a hell of a league. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, it is. I mean, the top eight teams in that league could all, you know, they all have a chance to get a NCAA tournament bid this year. I'm doubtful that they all will, but, you know, seeing good quality teams compete for those slots is what's fun. I mean, I don't know if Oklahoma will be able to get there because of how deep the league is, but, you know, this is a veteran team now. Lon Kruger is sort of, you know, been able to build something over a year, and they'll certainly be in the equation. Oklahoma State is, I think, a team that a lot of people have, you know, are sort of falling in love in because of the, you know, the LeBron Nash and Marcus Smart, who's obviously a very, very talented player coming in. Unfortunately, Oklahoma State has just been hit by a series of very bad, you know, transfer news, unfortunate things. Cesar Guerrero, unfortunate family situation where he had to move back to California. Olakemi, we don't know if he's going to be eligible or not, although I am assuming that actually in my model. And the situation with Williams, I think it was Brian Williams, just became injured within, you know, and he's out for the season now. So Oklahoma State has some depth issues, but, you know, you have a deep, talented team like Oklahoma State. You have West Virginia, Bob Huggins competing in the Big 12 for the first time. You have Oklahoma, and these are going to be the weaker teams in this league. And just to see how they fight it out for those last slots, it, to me, is going to be one of the most sort of unsung fun stories. And of course, the other big story would be, I really think the ACC race will be very fascinating. I mean, you know, NC, you know, all of us, I think, in the back of our head have memories of, you know, the great NC State success, you know, very early in our lives. And I, you know, just seeing them have a chance to compete with Duke and North Carolina this year, I mean, I really want to see how that turns out.
It's going to be good, man. And we'll definitely get you back on the pod mid-season so you can defend these preposterous, you know, October October rankings of yours. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Hanner. Read him at basketball.realgm.com. He does a lot of good work there, some eye-opening and clarifying and objective work there. And read him in the upcoming College Basketball Prospectus preseason book. It should be awesome. Hey, man, always appreciate you coming on here, and I'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks a lot.
All right, we'll be back on Wednesday, Goodman and Parrish Show, where they can talk about stuff that's not like this at all. For those listening, thank you so much. If you are in the path of Sandy, please stay safe, stay dry, and hopefully keep the power on. We'll talk to you soon.